This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. Welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm excellent. Nice to hear your voice, Dean.
Well, it's nice to be heard. It's nice to be heard. Have you had a good week?
Yeah, it's been very, very good. I'm kind of wishing for a bit of rain. I know that's probably a bad word, four-letter word for some people, but haven't had any rain in a while, and things are starting to dry out. But after that beginning of the season with so much rain, things have been growing like crazy, including weeds, of course, and then it's been super windy. So, yeah, a lot of that tender growth, tender because it grew so fast with all that rain. I've had a fair amount of breakage on my tips of my trees and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, you know what? We drove up, spent a couple of days at the family cottage to do some maintenance, really, a workcation.
Yeah, spring.
Spring and trees down from the ice storm a couple months back that were on the property that needed to be cut up. But we noticed on the way up here driving, we're on the other side of Orillia on Gull Lake,
right,
just inside the Halliburtons. And we did also notice that there is that need for rain. We need a little bit now because things are starting to look a little bit dry.
Well, and I think it's just because I got a bit spoiled because there was so much rain, right? Yeah. We're always looking for every 10 days, you know, a steady rain and then sun in between. We rarely get that, but it's always a nice idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you've been busy in your garden. What's coming up? What needs, what's eating what? What's going on?
Well, in my garden, things are just getting bigger and better all the time. So that's exciting. And of course, like I said, weeds go without saying. I'm moving some things around because, you know, not everything works the way you want it to. And I'm off to a garden center. I haven't done any shopping this spring. So I'm off to a garden center today. I've been hankering after a Kentucky coffee tree.
Oh, I have no idea what that is.
It is a native tree. It actually was used, the pods were used as a coffee substitute back when the first Europeans came here. And of course, the indigenous people also used the pods for, you know, cooking and eating and medicinal purposes, but they're completely toxic unless you cook them. So it's very important that they're cooked pods. Yeah. But it's a really cool tree. It's unusual. There's not many of them anymore. You know what's interesting? The reason there's not many of them anymore is because the way they spread is by seed. Well, those seeds, as I mentioned, are toxic. But way back when the dinosaurs were roaming the earth, there were these creatures called giant sloths. And the sloths would eat the pods and then poop out the seeds.
Yeah.
And then the trees would grow. Well, there ain't any more giant sloths anymore. And there ain't any more pooped out seeds. And as a result, this is a tree that is, you know, may go extinct because of lack of sloths pooping out seeds.
So. Wow. Just another romantic morning on the garden.
Doing my best to do the sloth thing.
No, it's great. Well, but that's birds help things move around that way as well, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay. I know. We've talked about that on the show before, how you can have things that will pop up in the most unexpected places because a bird will drop a seed there.
Right. Like, or
other animals.
Where'd that come from? Like, I've got wild strawberries now all over the place. I'm like, where'd those come from?
Gotcha. Now, I know you have a couple of announcements, but why don't I give out the numbers, okay, and all the info there. So if you live in Toronto, we would love for you to give us a call by using this number, 416-360-0740. If you live outside Toronto, but still within Ontario, here's a toll-free number to use, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Owen know if you are a first-time caller, because then I will give you the garden wings, okay? We'd love for you to call often, call early, and important, one question per call, please. That is really important because we want to make sure we get in as many as possible, okay? And yeah, so what do you got for us, Charlie? What's your announcements?
A couple. One I mentioned last week when you weren't here, but Paul Oliver was with me. Yeah. He was great, as usual, from the Urban Nature Store. Today, this weekend, in Hamilton, the Hamilton and Burlington Rose Society is holding their 68th annual juried exhibition of cut garden roses and floral design. Of course, that's at the Royal Botanical Gardens in Burlington. So today from 10 to 5 and tomorrow 10 to 5, show is free, but of course you pay to get into the RBG. What's kind of cool is they do have some talented designers on hand today at 3 o'clock doing make and take small designs under the guidance of some of these designers. So if you're interested in floral design, that's a great sort of, you know, set yourself to be there for that 3 o'clock event. There are short talks at 11 and 2. There are potted mini roses for sale while quantities last. And of course, tomorrow, the cut rose stems are auctioned off as a fundraiser.
So that's I remember that.
The show. Yeah. So that's definitely worth checking out. The other is, speaking of, you know, long-term events, the Gardens of Uxbridge is open for the 29th year. We have the annual garden tour going on. It's a private gardens, of course, and they're big gardens because Uxbridge is up north of Toronto. So they tend to be, you know, quite the estate lots, I imagine, maybe not all of them, but some of them. So it's a driving tour, self-guided, $25 if you go to www.gardensofuxbridge.org. You can buy tickets. And once you've got tickets, then you'll go to the meeting place, get your map and all that sort of thing on the day of the event, which of course is next Saturday, June 21st, between the hours of 10 and 5 p.m.
Yes, and of course, next weekend will be the very first weekend of summer because summer arrives this Friday at, I think it's 10:41 p.m. So the first full day of summer will be our next garden show next Saturday.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. Yeah. I love it. It's I mean, I love the solstice, but I always get so sad because we're in our longest days of the year now, right?
Yes, we are. Yeah, enjoying them. Absolutely. You know what? We've got time to take a caller. Why don't we do that before we go to our next, our first break? Let's go to Sandra from Etobicoke. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sandra.
Good morning, Charlie and Dean. Charlie, last year I think you mentioned lawn fertilizing, so I did the fall fertilizer, and I believe you said not to put anything on in the spring. I didn't. My lawn looks wonderful, but I'm thinking, should I be applying summer fertilizer now?
Okay, this is a this is a budget question and it's a philosophical question, I think. The lawn companies, the fertilizer companies, would love you to buy into their program. And their program is that you fertilize four times a season: fall, spring, summer. Oh, wait, that'd only be three. So start spring and then early summer, midsummer, fall. So they love the idea of everybody fertilizing four times a year. I don't want my lawn to grow that fast because, you know, fertilizer really works, right? So I use it only in the fall and I use it to help the lawn get through the winter. Winters can be very hard on plants, and with snow, without snow, you know, wind, cold, warm, rain, all the weird stuff we get in the winter, the fertilizer helps, you know, make the lawn plants tougher and better able to withstand the craziness of winter. During the summer, I do not fertilize. If your lawn looks good, why do you want to have to mow it every 3 days? Like, that's what's going to happen, right? The more you fertilize, the more you have to mow. So up to you, you know, up to you. If it's looking good, I don't worry about it. Mine's a bit pale right now. It's not emerald green anymore because, again, it's gotten a bit dry. I've got some patches where I can see very much dryness, but I'm just going to wait for rain. I'm not going to crank fertilizer because I don't water my lawn. So, you know, fertilizer can be a problem. It'll burn if you don't have sufficient water.
Okay. Thanks very much for the question there, Sandra. We are actually going to go to our first break now, okay? Do give us a call. Again, the number is 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back on The Garden Show, and no surprise at all, my goodness, the lines are full because gardening season is in full swing.
Exactly. We love it. We love it. This is the best time of year.
Love it. And I'll bet you we will not. I shouldn't say it. I was going to say, I bet you we won't have one amaryllis question.
Please.
You never know. You never know. Okay, yeah. Let's go to Jennifer. We have Jennifer from Guelph. Welcome to The Garden Show, Jennifer.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
What do you got for Charlie there, Jennifer?
I have a question about pill bug infestation. Mm-hmm. I've had them in the past, a few, but this year they are just crazy, so many of them. And they're eating my little seedlings, which is very discouraging. I've tried diatomaceous powder. I've tried putting little collars around the bottoms of the plants. I haven't mulched yet. I'm wondering, maybe I shouldn't mulch because they like to hide under mulch. Do they not? Mm.
They do.
I try next.
So are you sure it's pill bugs that are doing the damage to the plants? Like you've seen them chewing away?
Absolutely. Yes, I have.
Not cutworms. Because I was going to say, like some people, like a pill bug, another name for them is roly-polies. So it's a little insect that... It's got six legs, if you count the legs. If you tap it with your finger, it rolls into a little ball, right?
We used to play with these when we were kids.
Exactly, like marbles, right?
Yeah.
So, but they're smaller than a marble. And usually we think of pill bugs as a good thing because we find them in our composters, for example. They are wonderful decomposers. However, they can end up like it sounds like you're experiencing at your place, Jennifer. Just the quantity is too much. So then now they're not just doing the good things. They're also eating, you know, things you don't want eaten. So you're absolutely right. Do not put mulch down and try and create an environment that is not conducive to them. So they love damp. They love dark. So make sure you don't have any mulch around. Of course, remember you want to minimize moisture, like watering, if you can. Just water very specifically where you need water. Ensure that there's lots of great drainage, that you don't have moisture hanging around the garden, because that's what they love. They love the moisture. If you've got, you know, anywhere collecting water that you don't isn't good, like bowls of water out or bird baths, just make sure you're freshening water. You're not letting it stand for any length of time. The diatomaceous earth is a great one. Traps, the same kind of traps we use for earwigs. So earwigs, same idea. They do all their damage in the dark, but they love the darkness. So we'll put out bamboo, hollow bamboo poles or empty lengths of hose. They'll be out all night, but they'll hide during the day. So you can set out those same kind of traps for pill bugs, but you have to empty them. So you've got to go every morning and dump whatever's in there into a jar of water with a drop of oil or a drop of soap. And again, you're just trying to lower the population. You're never going to get rid of them all. Collars around your young seedlings might help. Diatomaceous earth should definitely help in a ring around the plants that you're trying to save. Diatomaceous earth is like jagged shards of glass to an insect. It just looks like powder to us, but it's very, very sharp and it will hurt them.
Okay.
Sound good? Well, good luck with that.
Good luck, Jennifer. Again, we used to find these very fascinating as kids. I was just looking on the internet. You know how many, they have all sorts of names for these things. They're very funny.
They're all over the world.
The roly-polies, they're called roll-up bugs, curly bugs, cheesy bug, a so bug, a doodle bug.
One of
them's even called a bed pisser. I have no idea why.
What?
Yes, in the Netherlands and Belgium, that's what they call them. They have bench biters, a cheeky pig. There's like about 50 different names all over the world for these interesting little...
Call them pill bugs because they roll up into a round ball. But a sow bug and a pill bug are actually not the same thing. So that could be confusing as well. There are two different insects that look similar.
Yeah.
The ones that don't roll up are sow bugs. The ones that do roll up are pill bugs.
Okay, so that's apparently a term in the U.S., but they've given the countries and all over the world they have different names for the little nicknames for these actual bugs.
Yeah, what we call a common name.
Yeah. I'd forgotten all about these things, but there as soon go. As you mentioned them, I thought, oh, I know what they are. Exactly. We used to roll them around in the palms of our hands.
That's why you do the garden show. It takes you back to your childhood.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. Okay, we're going to go to our next caller. We have Nancy. She's calling from Burlington. Welcome to the garden show, Nancy.
Oh, hi, Charlie.
Morning.
I have had a beautiful bulb flowering spring. I think it's called Sunstar, or it has some other names. I can give you the proper name is
Ornithogalum. Ornithogalum.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. No worries.
I want to see if I can regenerate the bulb, and I need to know what the stages are that I put this bulb through.
Okay, so you don't have to do anything. Bulbs are designed to regenerate themselves. The main thing, of course, is that you want to let them... Remember what... underground, we don't see what's going on, but you've got the... Well, like you mentioned, the common name is Star of Bethlehem. So it's a beautiful, white.
Right. Yeah, Star of Bethlehem.
Yeah, flowering or garden star. So they're beautiful, beautiful. Enjoy them in the spring. But what are we going to do when they, I'm just trying to remember if these guys survive outside in the winter. So you have them outside, right? In the ground?
No, right now they're just in a pot on my table.
Okay, so take them outside. Do you have a balcony or a garden you can put them into?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just trying to remember. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to double check this, but with all bulbs that can survive the winter in our Ontario gardens, we allow the flowers to finish, we allow the leaves to grow, we water as necessary in the pot, not soggy, but just keep them moist. The green leaves will eventually fade. When they fade, the bulbs will go dormant. Once we have dormant bulbs in the pot, we've stopped watering, of course. We don't want to rot the bulbs. Outside, sunny location, well-drained sunny location, and they'll go into the ground, obviously. And in a pot, they're all squished together. Out in the garden, you'll plant them so they're not touching, down about 2 inches, and then they'll come up again in the spring. My only one question is I just have to check 100% that they are hardy. I think they are, though, and you're fine for them to be outside, and you'll see them outside next spring.
Okay, thanks very much. Yeah, thanks very much for the call there, Nancy. We have to run to our next break, but we'll be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, before we go to our next caller, you want to say what?
Thank you very much. I just wanted to say, I was not totally remembering Ornithogalum on the last call, which was Nancy. So she lives in Burlington, which is a very mild part of Southern Ontario. So chances are, if you follow what I said, Nancy, which is to get them out into a sunny, well-drained location in your garden, planted before next winter, so get them planted by September. Once things get a little cooler, I'd mound some leaves up in that area where you've planted them. They're very likely to survive the winter and come up next spring. If you're living, in Barrie, you couldn't do that. You'd have to keep them in the pot and you'd have to overwinter them in your refrigerator, and then you would enjoy them in the pot next spring. So bottom line, it's a hardiness question, and they're borderline hardy when we're in Ontario. The zone 5 is kind of their cutoff point. All right.
Okay. And the numbers to call us once again, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Well, we're staying in Burlington. We're going to get another caller from that city. Welcome to the Garden Show, Susan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
What have you got there, Susan?
About tropicals, like indoor. I have had a jasmine and a bougainvillea under light through the winter, and they have survived. And I put them outside, but they're leggy, kind of spindly, and I'm wondering whether these are plants that I can cut back and whether that will make them fluff out more or bush out more.
For sure, for sure. Under lights is brilliant. I'm glad you did that because the chance of them getting through the winter without supplemental light is pretty low. Like they really, they are tropical plants. They want intense 12 hours a day and dark 12 hours a day. So that's the lights would have been a big help.
I think have our neighbors think we have a grow up because our dining room glows at night.
I have one of those in my basement. I know, purple. It's a purple glow because I have LED lights. So what I would do, are they still in the house right now or have you put them out?
I have put them out.
Okay. So putting them out, of course, is you have to go slowly. I'm guilty of having rushed one of my tropicals out into the real world too fast. And I've got a bunch of burned leaves as a result, but I'm sure it'll be fine. So slowly.
Yeah.
You want to avoid burning leaves. So it's a gentle in and out and starting in the shade. You will want to move both of those into the sun or at least a pretty bright spot, you know, half day sun. I would trim them right back for sure. I'd also fertilize them and trim them back. Make sure that the soil, if they're in pots for many, many years, you might need to add a bit of soil that might have dropped a bit around the surface there. If you're going to repot, now is the time. Now or sometime in the next few weeks is the time to do any repotting. But yeah, just getting them out, getting them looking better with some trimming, you'll find they'll be super happy for a trim. They'll certainly bush out as a result of removing the tips.
So a third off the top or more than that?
You can go, I'd go about a third at the most, and I would choose to, you're trying to make a balanced plant. So you may find that one side is heavier than the other, so you're going to cut back further on one than the other, just to make it as balanced in the pot as you can. Alrighty?
Okay.
Great.
Yep. Thanks so much, Susan.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Charlie, you made a comment during that call that I'm curious about, and we've only touched upon it periodically on the show. The color of the light can vary that you are putting over top of your plants. You said you've got a purple light over top of them. So how does that work?
Okay, so if you look at the sun, if you right now stick your head out the window and look at the sun, you see the color white or yellow, right?
Yeah.
But we know if we get a little prism that that white light is made up of many colors that our eyes see as white. Mm-hmm. So we've got the spectrum. So you got infrared on the one end and you got ultraviolet on the other end. And then you've got oranges and greens and everything in between. Now, at first, because plants grow outside, everybody assumed that a white light, you know, the kind we have in our ceilings, would grow plants. Well, it turns out, no, that's not really what plants love. They don't love white lights like Thomas Edison invented. There's not enough of the right spectrum in a white light bulb. So then they started working on grow lights, and grow lights became these sort of pink, you know, the fluorescent tubes or even a little, you know, bulb, standalone bulb with kind of a pink glow. See, because they realized that the red wavelengths were better for growth, for photosynthesis. Well, further invention of lighting and, you know, super improvements in lighting, particularly for greenhouse growers, were the LED lights because they aren't hot. They are very specific wavelengths. They're very cheap to run. They go for tens of thousands of hours. So nowadays, if you buy a grow light and you buy an LED grow light, it's going to be a mixture. Usually it's a 60-40 mixture of little diodes, red and blue. Nothing else. So it looks purple to our eye. And when you look at the plants, they kind of look brown, like they don't even look green under these lights. And yet they're the happiest plants ever. And then if you turn off the grow light and turn on a white light, you're like, oh yeah, it's a great looking plant. But under the LED, it's a funny sort of a color, but it's the right wavelengths to produce the best growth.
Right. And I guess that would make sense if you know your color wheel, which I know you do, because plants have, the green is made up of yellow and blue. And so you're mixing all three of your primary colors together there, which is why you're getting a bit of a brown look on the plants, I would imagine.
That's right. And green is not something that plants can absorb because they themselves are green. So they reflect it back.
Gotcha. Oh, okay.
Need it.
Wow. Look at that. Dean learns. Dean continues to learn on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
It's a science show.
Absolutely. I love it. Love it. Okay. Our next caller is Kathy, and we are going to Markham. Welcome to The Garden Show, Kathy.
Thank you. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Morning.
I have a question about peppers.
Mm.
Something eating the leaves.
Oh, something.
What can I spray with? I don't see nothing. I cut a leaf. I turn it upside down, everywhere, all around. I don't see anything.
All right. So what's happening on their leaves? Are they getting chewed from the outside edges? Or have you got?
Yeah.
Yeah. So not holes in the leaves, but chewed from the edges.
Yes.
Okay. You know, seems a bit early, but you're in Markham. I mean, earwigs are a classic that they nibble the edges of flowers and leaves, and they do it at night. So that's
either
why
on the top on the leaf, the plant.
They'll do it anywhere. They're pretty agile. They can get anywhere. Why are you finding that the tips are gone before the bottom leaves?
They start from the bottom. It goes all the way to the top.
Okay. All right. So you have a couple of options. You heard us mention earlier when we were talking about pill bugs, something called diatomaceous earth. So diatomaceous earth is an insecticide that looks like a white powder, and it's completely non-toxic to us, but it's very detrimental to slugs, snails, and any crawling insects. And earwigs tend to be low enough to the ground. And even given the rain, it might even be something like slugs or snails that are causing your problem. Or yeah, there's many, many things that can be out chewing at this time of year. So I would get a hold of some of the white powder called diatomaceous earth. Don't worry about spelling it. Just spell it phonetically. D-I-A-T-O-M. Diatom.
Yes. And it's something we'll also, at the end of the show, we'll make
sure. Yeah, I can spell it more thoroughly. Just remember diatom, because it comes from diatom. It comes from coral. That's what diatomaceous earth. It's from coral. Anyway, so you're going to put little circles of that around your whatever you're trying to protect. Circles on the surface of the soil, and you're going to replace after rain because it will wash into the soil. I would try that to start. that's going to be one of your simplest ways to just stop whatever is going up into your plants. Alrighty.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Thanks very much, Kathy. Not nice when something is eating the leaves of our plants. And they typically do it. So many of these things do it at night, right? And so we see the aftermath in the morning. We don't always catch them doing it.
Exactly. I mean, you know, think there's so many things too. Like I plant beans from seeds, and there I am looking at my cute little bean seedlings coming up. And then one morning I go out and it's like, what? Where the tops have been eaten off. You know, the little leaves are gone. What's left? A little green stem, which of course will never grow because it doesn't have enough surface area to grow in terms of the sun. So it's okay. Time to replant the beans. But in my place, it's probably chipmunks. It could be, who knows?
And a lot of animals like those tender shoots, right? Because they're tender and sweet and they love them.
Sure. And insects, of course, are pretty specific on what they do. And then we've got all our little creatures that are omnivores. Like, think of a raccoon. They'll eat anything. They don't care. They'll even dead stuff. They'll just, you never know sometimes when it's happening at night, who's doing what, unless you've got cameras out, you know, motion cameras.
Yeah, which I know some people do. Yeah. And it's pretty fascinating if you have those to see what's going on in your garden at night.
At night, when you least expect it, there's a whole world out there.
Indeed. Okay, we have another caller on the line. This one from Thornhill. Welcome to The Garden Show, Cheryl.
Thank you. Good morning, sorry. I've been sitting here the whole time just listening, but something happens and I go, when you guys are talking. I don't know which end it is. I know you had problems a few weeks ago because I phoned about them. Second of all, I'd like to ask about amaryllis.
No!
I'm kidding.
I know.
I love it.
My question is, this year I went with a company that would deliver a whole bunch of mulch, and they put it in. And through various reasons, life gets in the way, I didn't get all my seeds in. So I'm just wondering, how can I plant seeds and some plants with the mulch down?
Oh, okay, so you just move the mulch.
Well, you're breaking up now.
Oh.
Oh, there, now you're back.
You can move the mulch, Cheryl?
Yeah. Yeah.
Move the mulch out of the way so that you're just looking at bare soil. Of course, when we do put mulch on our gardens, we never want the mulch to touch the plants. Whether they're new plants or old plants, the mulch stays away from the stems of our plants. Okay. So that's just something to consider as well. But yeah, I would just move the mulch around.
And then just plant them and leave it a little bit before I put the mulch back on top or around it?
Like, well, that's right.
Seeds, I've got to get them into the ground or into the soil.
Right. So, yeah, like what I do is I plant all my seeds and then I put my mulch in afterwards, but I just put the mulch in between.
I know, I do
between.
Normally too, but this was a company.
Yeah. You know, I get it. So just move your mulch so that your mulch is in between your plants and in between where you're planting your seeds. So if you've got a row of carrots, don't worry about putting mulch.
Flower stuff.
Right. Flowers. Okay, yeah, so around flowers, exactly, and flower seeds. Yeah, just mulch, just move the mulch, plant your stuff. Let the mulch be, you know, you can level it all out, but you don't want it touching the plants.
Okay, and then so just wait for the seeds to start. Now, I need to water them more, of course, when they start.
Yes,
But that'll be okay with the mulch?
Yep. Yeah, as long as there's not mulch on top of the seeds, they'll be fine. Oh.
Okay, sounds simple. Because I looked it up, and every time I looked it up, I got different answers.
Oh, no, yeah, no, it's not hard.
Okay, thanks so much for the call there, Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Yeah, I got to keep that mulch away from the amaryllis, don't we?
From everything. Mulch away from everything. We love mulch, but I know. I'm actually in that situation. I've been delaying getting my mulch delivered.
Okay.
So I've got my son coming next week.
And because? You're having it delayed because?
Well, just because I've got so much on my list, and it's just another thing. It'll sit on the driveway, and it just sits there with a big tarp on it. Like, I'm going to have 10 yards of mulch delivered and some soil. So I've got my son coming next week for a couple of days, and he's going to be on a short leash in the garden.
and he knows it already, right?
He knows it, exactly. I'll feed you, you work. And so I'm going to get the mulch delivered before he comes. And yes, that's, you know what else is going on at my place is trees. I planted trees in the lawn. Mm. Now, the lawn has slowly but surely grown up to the trees. Originally, we had nice big circles with mulch around the trees, but that was 5 years ago. So now it's time to get in there and cut out all that sod, get that grass right away from those tree trunks, peel that all out, replace the soil, and get the mulch on so that I can whippersnap much more effectively, and the trees are much happier without the lawn right up against them.
Right, but you can also put too much mulch around your trees as well, can you? There's a balance, is that right?
Well, it's a stupid volcano thing that people do.
I've seen this.
You don't want, it's basically, you don't want a volcano, you want a donut. So there's a donut that goes around the tree. So 2 to 4 inches deep is your mulch. And this is, you know, crushed bark mulch we're talking about. A donut goes around the trunk of the tree, 2 to 4 inches or 5 to 10 centimeters deep, but not touching the trunk of the tree. So keeping that a good inch or so away from the tree. No big slopes, no big like volcanic look to this mess. It's a nice little donut. That's all it is.
Okie dokie. I think we have time for one more call before our next pause. Let's go to Alan. He's Fort Erie. Welcome to the Garden Show, Alan.
Good morning. I have the same issue as Cheryl, that maybe it's only us on the phone. It crackles every now and then when we're trying to listen.
Well, I don't know what's going on. Anyway, it's the wind.
My question is, I've been planting apple trees from seeds. I've done it seasons now. And the seeds get, the trees get about 1 month old, and then they start to get a mold on the leaves. Mm. And I've Googled to see how to clean it, and I'm trying to look for prevention, not repair.
Right. No, absolutely. Because mildews, fungal diseases must be prevented. That you can never, ever cure them. So the seeds you're planting them indoors or outdoors?
Indoors.
Okay. So what you All right. So what you need, I assume you've got a little setup like we were talking about, you know, a grow up with some lights and heat and all the important accoutrement to provide a good environment for seeds, right?
Negative. I put them in a pot and I put them by the window, and it takes 2 or 3 weeks and they start to sprout.
Okay. So, all right. So they're in the window, they start to sprout, and then before you know it, they start getting a mildew. They need more air circulation. So what we will do sometimes in, when we're growing quite a lot of seeds, is we'll actually run a fan over the seedlings as they're growing to keep the air moving, to minimize mildew. Particularly if you're in your kitchen with these little pots of seeds, you know, high humidity in kitchens with cooking and dishwashers, et cetera. So, you know, it's a humidity issue that's causing you to have the mold problem. Mm-hmm. So better air circulation. The other is, what I'll do sometimes is I'll just run my hands over top of seedlings, like tomato seedlings, et cetera, just to toughens them up a bit. It makes them think that it's a real world when you give them a bit of a hard time. So maybe put them near an open window where there's going to be a little more air, that sort of a thing. When it's just once they start to grow, you're going to have to increase, keep the light levels up, keep the moisture levels reasonable, not too wet, just reasonable, and get some air going.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Thanks so much for the call there, Alan.
Yeah.
We're, I guess my comment on that at some point, Charlie, obviously apple trees are not meant to be an indoor plant. So, I mean, at some point you got to move them outside as well. I don't know how soon that comes.
Well, definitely. But before winter, they need to be outside. But the other challenge that Alan's got there is he's growing apples from seeds. Two things. One is he doesn't know what kind of apple he'll end up with in terms of an edibility. And frankly, no apples in Ontario are grown on their own roots. They are typically grafted onto a different root. And the reason why is because the most edible apples do not have the most vigorous roots. So we have a different apple root system at the bottom, which is a real tough, almost like a wild type apple, with the chosen apple growing out the top. So whether it's Macintosh or, you know, Honeycrisp, it's growing off a different root system. So we get the best of both worlds. We get a wonderful tasting fruit on a nice tough root system.
Yeah, I think that the majority of people would be unaware that that's the case. You just go by an apple orchard and you figure that they've grown
from seeds.
From seeds, yeah.
And no. And also that's the other thing about seeds, of course, they don't breed true. So you take this is a yummy apple. I love this apple so much. I'm going to save the seeds from this yummy apple and I'm going to grow this apple because it's so good. The chances of you getting the same tasting apple from the seeds inside that apple are 25%.
Wow. Okie dokie. Well, give us a call. Speaking of numbers, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, you and I were talking about the fact that apples are so dominant up in my neck of the woods,
where
I live, Collingwood, and to the west, you know, Thornbury, Clarksburg is a big apple, and even stretching into Owen Sound. And of course, Owen Sound 92.3 has recently joined the Zoomer family. And I know that they're getting The Garden Show up there too. So if you're from Owen Sound, give us a call. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
No, that, but weigh in on what you think about growing apples from seeds.
Yeah, because probably have more. There could be some folks up there that have a lot more experience.
Exactly. Than you apples. And I put together.
Absolutely. Remember, I've mentioned this to you before, but I remember I was fascinated as a young boy because my grandmother was so proud of this apple tree that they planted in their backyard, which grew five different types of apples.
Right.
She had purchased one that had five, and I was fascinated. And that's when I learned this idea of grafting. So, but yeah, it would produce, each branch sort of produced a different variety of apples.
Yeah, which is very cool, especially for a small yard. You don't need five trees, you only need one. And they pollinate each other too.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Very neat. Okay. Let's go to our next caller. We have Prakash on the line from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, Prakash.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I have another amaryllis question.
It's okay. Don't be sorry.
Love it. Don't be sorry.
We were joking.
Embarrassed. I'll tell you the quick story on this. It came in a box, and I followed all the instructions to the letter. It's roughly 3 inches in diameter, and I put it in a pot that's about 8 inches tall and 8 inches wide. 8 inches wide. And, started to water it twice a week after the leaves appeared. Oh, followed the instructions to the letter, and it grew quite well for the first month. And then then after about 6 to 8 leaves, it started to tilt to one side. All the leaves seemed to point in one direction, and then now they're starting to fade and fall off, dry off. So I was wondering what's going wrong and what I can do.
Okay, did it ever flower for you?
No, not near there.
Not there. Okay, and then my next question is, when you planted the bulb in the pot, did you make sure that the top half of the bulb was sticking up out of the soil?
Yes, I did. And in fact, I might be, if I put it too low, I think it's after watering, the soil went down a bit. But so it's now at 40%. It should be about 66% immersed in soil.
Yeah, so that's okay. I mean, you can always add a tiny bit of soil if you needed to. Have you got it outside or inside?
It has been inside so far, but now the weather was a bit better. So I put it out on the deck on a patio table. But the deck has filtered light, and it's got trees and it's sort of sun and shade,
Okay, sounds perfect. All right, what you'll find, amaryllis are not really a beautiful house plant after they flower. Those leaves tend to be, like you said, they're kind of floppy, and they sometimes grow to one side. And the older ones, they will sometimes turn yellow or brown, but new little green shoots should always be coming up from the center. So be careful with the watering. You don't want to overwater. Better to underwater than overwater. So feel the soil really thoroughly with your fingers or the weight of the pot before watering. None of this twice a week watering. Water based on the fact that the soil is dry, like really dry, bone dry almost. And it's just that you're going to do that all summer. You're going to have it outside, sun, shade, drying out between waterings, watering when necessary. And come August, late August, early September, then we'll talk about next steps. But for now, what you're doing is fine. You could consider fertilizing with just a general all-purpose, blue powder mixed up with some water. Use that once on that plant. You may find that will help sort of perk it up a bit, get a little more green growth. But otherwise, the worst thing you can do right now is overwater it, and that will kill it. Otherwise, it's just fine on its own.
Okay, thanks so much for the call there, Prakash.
Thank you.
Get that amaryllis outside. And yeah, no apologies for an amaryllis question. Much appreciated. I have mine outside too, starting to get all their photosynthesis for the year.
I have mine outside, and they're pretty floppy. They're not really pretty plants, but I have a sort of a corner on my patio where I call it my nursery. It's where I put the things I'm working on. And they're there. They're going to sit there all summer. And I actually end up with a lot of I have other people's amaryllis too. Because nobody knows what to do with them.
An amaryllis rescue.
Yeah.
Rescue farm.
Exactly. The sanctuary. The amaryllis sanctuary. But of course, I rent them back out, right? The plants go home to their parents when they're flowering. They have that little moment, when they're not orphans and they get to go home, and then they come back.
It's a foster home. You have an amaryllis foster.
Pretty much,
sanctuary. Love it. Okay. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. Let's jump right into our next caller. We have Anne calling from Hagersville. Welcome to The Garden Show, Anne.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling with regard to my ornamental pear. I have some shoots coming around the base of the tree. This is a growing season. Will it harm the tree if I don't remove those?
Oh, you want to remove those because it will destroy the aesthetics of the tree, and ultimately it will harm the tree.
Oh, you just
okay, so the,
hard.
Yeah, why do you like them?
Well, I thought it would make a bush out more, you know, it'd be, you know, bigger bush.
Okay, so if you want, see, those ornamental pears are grafted. Again, we talked about grafting with apples. So they're grafted onto a root system, which is could be one of many things. It used to be quince that pears were grafted onto. So what's growing from the bottom are suckers, usually from the root. If you allow those to grow, number one, you'll lose your tree. When you planted a tree, you won't have a tree. You'll have a bush, and it won't be a pear tree. It'll be whatever the root system is. And so you will lose your expensive ornamental pear for a very vigorous, bushy, maybe quince. I'm not sure what the roots are that they're grafting onto these days. So yes, but you're not going to cut those out. You're going to go out on your hands and knees with a pair of gloves and a trowel. You're going to pull the soil away from where those suckers are growing from. If it's below ground, you're going to carefully, without damaging any bark on the tree, pull the soil back, and then with your thumb, you're going to bend and break those suckers off from the main trunk of the tree. And when you do that, when you go down, it's usually from below ground, might be growing off the root, might be growing off the trunk below the graft. Either way, you're going to break them off, and they will not grow back. If you just go in there with your pruners, everywhere where you cut, instead of having one sucker, you'll have two. So you're going to double your sucker growth. If you use pruners, you're going to minimize your sucker growth if you break them off. Okay?
There you go, Anne.
That's the definitive answer.
To save your ornamental pear.
Yeah, which you spent a lot of money on. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Again, fascinating, the whole idea of grafting. I would have never suspected that you'd get a whole different plant if it's coming up from underneath.
Yeah, well, it does. I mean, that's what happens with roses sometimes. People go, my rose went wild. That's what sometimes happens, is that the grafted, roses are grafted onto roses in some cases, not all cases. There are examples of roses growing on their own roots. But if your rose has been grafted and the root system starts to grow, the graft will fail because the root plant is so vigorous, it will outgrow what's called the scion, which is the one that was grafted on, and the graft will fail. So you'll go from, you know, a Queen Elizabeth beautiful pink rose to this huge bush of little tiny red and white flowers. Okay. And you're going, that doesn't look like Queen Elizabeth, huh?
No.
Because you lost Queen Elizabeth. You got the root system.
Okie dokie. Okay, we're running out of time, but we're going to try and squeeze in one more quick caller. We have Mary from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Mary.
Thank you. Good morning to both of you. I've called before. I have hibiscus plants, one in a 4-inch pot and the other three. 3 and 5 years I've had them. The odd time I had this happen were the bud drops. They've been prolific bloomers. They've always been on inside south-facing window. They bloom through the winter. I take them out in the summer. But this time, not only am I still getting, when they're nice and fat, the buds ready to bloom, and they usually bloom prolifically, as I've said, they are now, and I've never had this, they are wizening while they're there. And I have fertilized with 20-20-20, and they, like I could say, they never go dry. I keep lifting them. I have no idea what's going on. Many months ago, they had, I forgot, and I listened to the program that reminded me, the white mealybugs.
Right.
You know, you could pick them off with rubbing alcohol, but I still had melocyan, so I sprayed them heavily.
Don't tell anybody.
Shiny leaves and everything are gone.
Okay.
I don't know what to do.
All right, so... if you sprayed the malathion fairly recently, it is possible that has causing the bud drop. Malathion is a surface insecticide. It would not have been absorbed into the plant, but it will affect the leaves and whatever's on the plant at that point. So that could be partially what's happening there. The other thing is water. Be careful you don't overwater. Hibiscus, it's almost better to let them go to the point of wilting a bit. The bright green leaves will fade a bit. The luster on the leaves will fade a bit. And then water thoroughly. So try to let them go dry before watering. Not cactus dry, but, you know, fairly dry. They don't like anything suddenly changing. So temperatures light levels, water levels, everything needs to be kept fairly similar and no extremes. And then the other thing is, are they root bound? Or are they just got a pot full of roots? Because they are super vigorous plants and they do tend to grow an awful lot of roots very quickly. So just something to consider. You might need to pull them out of the pot, check, and that could be causing some stress as well. And you mentioned mealybug. Look really closely for any other insects that could have moved in when you weren't looking, though shouldn't be with a malathion treatment.
Again,
thanks, Mary.
And we talk about the fact that a lot of these happen during the night when we're all asleep. So it leaves it, makes it a bit of a mystery.
Could be, yeah. I mean, hibiscus are pretty tough plants, but it's frustrating to lose the buds. So yeah, do a real super, super close look at the plants and just be careful with your extremes there, water and temperature.
Yeah, and it's time to say goodbye.
It is. Happy Father's Day, Dean.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank
I see. You're wearing a dad hat, which is pretty sweet.
I am, yeah. I've got something planned with my kids tomorrow that they don't know what it is, but I'll tell you about it next week.
What? You're surprising them? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
I got to hear more about this. Thanks, everybody. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.